actually she was in a real bad state when we first rescued her, you know, and she'd been used as a breeding dog, and she was in such a bad state. I honestly didn't think that she was going to live very long. So the fact that we got her up to 12 years old felt like a real blessing.
Welcome to The Consult Room, the podcast that celebrates pets and people. I'm Dr. Paul Mangtalo. I'm a veterinary surgeon with a passion for the rich insights and stories about pets in the modern world that we live. Whether you're a pet owner, a pet professional, or you just love hearing about pets, then this is the space for you.
I've recently spoken about alternative ways of owning dogs, which is particularly relevant when we consider the affordability of dog ownership against the context of the increased financial pressure that many people are under. Today, I wanted to talk specifically about dog sharing, which is something that I have personal experience of through owning my last dog, Dolly. Now, Dolly was an amazing Staffy Cross rescue that we shared for over 10 years with friends of mine. And I found it was an amazing way of sharing the responsibility and the costs of owning a dog, whilst also having the joy and benefits and companionship of dog ownership. So today it's just me, there's no other guests, but of course you. So welcome to the consult room. So what is dog sharing? Well, essentially it's when two or more households come together and jointly take care of a dog. So it's a bit like co-parenting for pets. So you get to share the joys of owning the dog, but also the responsibilities. Now, when we think of co-parenting, we immediately think of children, don't we? And there are situations where people have been, you know, put into a co-parenting situation, either through divorce, but there are other examples of where people intentionally set up that arrangement because that's the best way that they want to consider having a child. Now, it's the same with dogs, really. There are certain people that end up in a situation where you might split up with a partner. So you end up in a kind of a situation where who gets the dog, and you both love the dog. So you want to, consider a dog sharing or co-parenting arrangement. But there are people that get dogs with the intention of, do you know what? I want to have a dog, but I don't want the full responsibility, so I consider a dog share, which is kind of what I did. I came across a dog, Dolly. She needed rescuing. At the time, I was kind of working full time and I was also traveling a lot and I was away a lot of weekends. And I just thought, you know what, with my current lifestyle, I'm not sure I could commit to a dog full time. But I'd had a similar conversation with friends of mine who were a couple. They lived close by. We'd gone for a drink in the pub. And they were also saying, do you know what, I love a dog, but we travel a lot. We go away a lot. I wouldn't want one full time. And that conversation kind of rang true in my head. And then when this dog was brought into the practice, she was a dog that had been found as a cruelty case. And she came in and she was such a lovely temperament. And I just thought, you know what? She'd be the perfect dog. She seems really sociable, well-adjusted, and perhaps it could work. So I spoke to my friends and I said, hey, I found this great dog. What do you think? So we sat and had a chat about it and we thought, well, how is it all going to work? And we went into quite a bit of detail. But I think it really was, at that point, a win-win situation. We thought, well, give it a try. And see how it works. And that arrangement lasted for 10 years and it was brilliant. She had two fantastic homes. She got to go on double the amount of holidays and she had the best life ever, but we also had the best experiences with her too. So in my experience, some of the benefits of dog sharing are that you can split the costs of owning a dog. You can split costs like food, vet bills, grooming, all that sort of stuff. And I remember at the time, like, I'm a vet, so, you know, veterinary advice, I don't necessarily have to consider that. But the costs of owning a dog go way beyond that. Things like insurance, you know, grooming, food, all that sort of stuff. And at the time, I was thinking, gosh, it's not money I can just, you know, find in my current circumstances. But having the ability to share that with somebody else was really appealing. But another thing was this concept of shared responsibility. Now, I work in a job that can be incredibly busy. I'm on call, sometimes at short notice. And at the time, it was great having friends that could, you know, give me the backup of saying, oh, yeah, we can take her, don't worry. And similarly, if they wanted to go away for a weekend, I'd be like, yeah, I'll keep her, don't, you know, no problem at all. So it's just that real flexibility. And you save a huge amount of cost on things like dog walkers and doggy daycare, kennels, all that sort of stuff, which, you know, if you've got no alternatives, you know, somebody needs to be caring for your dog. So what would I advise to get started? Well, in my experience, I think it's the crucial and most important thing is to find the right people to share with. Now, these should be individuals or families, people that you trust and have a good rapport with. I am a great advocate of a scheme called Borrow My Doggy, and my little dog Rodney has got lots of borrowers that enjoy his company. But even, you know, with those arrangements, which are quite short term, maybe a day here and a day there, it was really important for me to get to know these people, you know their kind of, you know, obviously their places where they live, make sure that their gardens were kind of secure, but really more importantly, their values, their beliefs, their approach to things like, you know, the discipline of the dog, and did they understand what good feeding was, this was sort of a risk to look out for, all that sort of stuff, really good, sensible people. But people that also you can be quite aligned with on certain things, the bigger picture, important things. And I'll talk about rules in a minute because I've found out some really interesting things on that process. But really importantly is this, you know, find the people, set up the schedule that suits everyone. And it is ensuring that everyone gets their fair share of time with the dog, but it's what suits them as well. Now, in my situation, it actually really helped for me to be kind of the dog owner, if you like. So, and I guess that was from a perspective of the microchip was registered to me. If Dolly needed any emergency veterinary treatment, I was the person to speak to. And obviously being a vet, that really, really helped. So in our situation, it was kind of a dog share in terms of time and commitment, but actually the end responsibility point would come to me as the designated owner. And I know there's some really interesting kind of cases, especially in the law, where ownership of dogs is contested, and it's very difficult. Like, you think that things like a microchip would determine that you are the owner of the dog, but it's really not that clear cut. So it's really important for me to kind of take that full actual responsibility, but have this arrangement for sharing her in terms of time and commitment. So from a communication perspective and a rules perspective, if you think about the rules of the dog, if you like. Now, it was really important for me that Dolly understood boundaries, that she didn't beg, for example. It's one pet hate of mine. I don't like dogs begging. So, you know, one thing for me is do not, you know, feed her tidbits from a table when you're eating. Do not feed her from a plate. It's my one big rule. It's my one pet hate. So that was a bit of a no-brainer. I started off by also being very specific around things like, well, I don't like dogs on my bed. So I don't want her to get into the habit of bed. And actually, I'm not a great fan of dogs on the sofa either. Especially, she was a medium-sized dog, but she used to love rolling in fox poo. So she often, like, would come in from a walk stinking. And I'm like, I don't want her jumping up on the sofa. And she got beds in every room, you know, she had these big, comfortable beds and everything. And I'd often sometimes sit on the floor and have her on my knee. But it was really interesting because at my friend's house, they absolutely did abide by the don't feed tidbits off the plate. They were really good in that respect. So she wasn't a big beggar. Although if she went and stayed at my mum's house, that was a slightly different story. And she would come back with those big puppy dog eyes. But that was a different conversation. But generally on day to day, she wouldn't beg. But they did allow her on the sofa and quite often in the bed with them. And what was quite interesting is that she kind of knew the rules for each house, and she adapted quite well. So she knew in my house that she wouldn't even attempt to jump on the sofa. She'd come in the room, she'd curl up in a bed, and she'd, you know, happily go to sleep. But when I used to go to their house, she'd jump up on the sofa and sit next to me and put her, you know, head on my lap, as if to say, yeah, hey, this is my space. And I was cool with that. That was absolutely fine. She seemed to adapt to that that knowledge of where she couldn't even go in each house. So in terms of that, that wasn't a real problem. But my advice would be, if there were some real kind of deal-breaking rules, that you are really, really clear on those. And then the other sort of things around communication are making sure you're all really clear, you know, on dates, on pickup arrangements, on things like that. And often I'd meet my friends in a park somewhere in London, or en route to somewhere convenient. And all that's really, really important. And I found also that certain things were quite important as well, like certain elements of routine were important. Like she liked to be fed at a certain time every day. She liked to have a walk first thing on the morning. And if you didn't get up and walk her, then she'd be pacing up and down, often with a lead in the mouth, whining, you know, like, well, what's going on? So those sort of things were quite important as well.
This episode is sponsored by Superdog from Vitabiotics, the UK's number one vitamin company. As a vet, I would always encourage a healthy, balanced diet for your dog. But like us, all dogs are different. So giving a vitamin supplement can act as an insurance policy to make sure you're meeting your dog's nutritional needs. Superdog's chewable, tasty braised beef tablets are packed with over 21 nutrients, expertly formulated for your special companion, including linseed oil to help maintain a glossy coat, green lip muscle to maintain joint health, and zinc and selenium to provide immune support. In a recent study, Superdog was recommended by 96% of dog owners. Dogs absolutely love them. I've personally seen improvements in many, many dogs whose owners have given Superdog vitamins for just a few weeks. Superdog is available now at Amazon, Ocado, Paws, Superdrug, and Vitabiotics.com.
For her, and you know, other dogs might be different, but I think as a general structure, that was quite important. So if I was going to reflect on some of the kind of the challenges, sometimes it's scheduling. That for me was the biggest problem. And whilst we tried to stick to a 2 week on, two week off kind of alternating, you know, life sometimes gets in the way. So you do have to have a bit of flexibility to accommodate changes. And, you know, for example, my friends were renovating a house in the south of France. So they'd often say, oh, we're going to go away for, you know, a couple of months in the summer. Now, actually, that ended up working out really well, because I actually drove down to the south of France with Dolly in the car, had a lovely little few days holiday, and then drove back to UK. And then a couple of months later, drove back and went and got her. She had an absolutely fantastic summer, skipping about in the French countryside. And when I came back, and obviously I really missed her, and I was a bit like, oh, I don't really want to, you know, leave her for that length of time. But when I came back to pick her up, it was quite funny, because she'd got this whole little kind of routine. She'd get up in the morning, and the village, a very small village, and it was all very open, and everybody could, you know, she literally had the roam of all the neighbours' little houses and everything. And she'd go over to one of the neighbours' houses, and she'd help walk their kids to school with them. And then on the way back, she'd pop into this little old couple, and she'd sit with them and have some bread and breakfast with them. And then she'd come home again, and she just had this really lovely little independent life, which was so different to her life in Southeast London. I actually felt quite sad about bringing her back to the city, but obviously she was really pleased to come back. But I guess the challenges that you could come across are, you know, disagreements in parts of the arrangement, whether that be rules, whether that be food. I was really, really kind of quite easygoing. I mean, she could eat anything. Now, she's the sort of dog that would eat anything. So I was a little bit kind of, you know, kind of, I didn't go all kind of vet advice on diet. I was really quite flexible with what they wanted to feed, and I gave some tips. And if I picked up any food, I'd often give them some as well. But I think you've got to be a little bit loose on things like that. Now, obviously, if it's something that is going to impact the health of the dog, then you probably should have some ground rules about that. But if everybody's got the dog's best interest at heart, that shouldn't really be a problem. So one of the most important things in dog sharing is that you've got to have the right dog. Now, that's quite an interesting statement to make, I think. But when you're you might be choosing a dog that you might be going to get with people together, or you might have a dog yourself that you're thinking of, do I want to share this dog with somebody else? Or somebody else might have a dog that you're thinking, oh, is that a good dog for me to share? Now, you've got to really consider the dog's temperament in this, and also their age, their energy levels, all that sort of stuff, because you need to make sure that this dog is a good fit for all the household, involved. Now, rescue dogs, I'm a great advocate of rescue dogs, and Dolly was a rescue dog. And from her perspective, she was a great candidate for sharing. She adapted well to different environments. She was a real people dog. She was relatively well socialized with other dogs. As she got a bit older, she did get a little bit grumpy with other dogs. She didn't tolerate puppies or anything like that. She didn't want dogs jumping all over her. But generally, she was quite an easygoing dog to take into lots of different situations. Now, if your dog is very clingy, if they suffer from separation anxiety, or they're nervous in different situations or environments, then it's probably not the best dog for this kind of arrangement. You've got to think really carefully about whether that dog has got the emotional resilience and adaptability for the different environments that dog sharing will put them in. But as a bit of a kind of a test bed, why not? If you're thinking about entering this arrangement, either take a dog for a few days or give your dog to somebody else for a few days. And there are schemes out there with, previous podcasts, we've talked about things like Borrow My Doggy. There's lots of things out there, lots of schemes out there, which are really good and conducive to dog sharing or the early parts of dog sharing. Well, I've talked about some of the legal and financial aspects of it. Now, I didn't have a legal agreement in place. I had a bit of a spoken word agreement, and these were very good friends of mine, which is, okay, so let's say she is legally my dog, I'm the official owner of her, but we will share her time, the time with her. As such, if there's a problem, I will commit to sorting it. If it's an emergency veterinary situation, if there's veterinary costs to me, I said that I would meet all those. And if there's any big decisions to make, now I will make those too. And as a result of that, I felt like I would take most of the financial responsibility should I need to. But I think all that was well kind of understood in our group. But I think if you are going into a new arrangement with people, it might be worth drawing up something in terms of a written agreement. And I think that will just be not only to protect yourself, but also to create real clarity on what the arrangement is. Now, where I felt that this was particularly important was when Dolly became very old. She got to 12 years old and she started suffering with significant mobility problems. And then she started losing neurological functioning on her back legs. And ultimately she started losing the ability to walk on her back legs. And it was very clear that she had something significantly wrong. It turned out that it was a spinal cord tumor. Now, in that situation, whilst dog sharing has been fantastic all her life, you've then got lots of other people involved in this quite emotional and stressful situation. Now, from my perspective, I was in a different position because I had felt like I had taken on the mantle of being the overarching owner. She had lots of owners from her perspective, and I wouldn't want to diminish the relationship that anybody had with her. But essentially, because of the people were involved, then it made it a little bit more complicated in terms of communication, in terms of decision making. But I felt that it was really important that I had to make that final decision. And also I'm a vet as well. So in terms of making decisions around end of life and euthanasia, I felt that I was more qualified to do that. But it was quite tricky because I had more people to take on that journey. And not as a vet, I was an owner as well. So I was also dealing with that myself. But I felt it was important at that point that I needed to make that decision when it was the time to let her go. And I, you know, she couldn't really function on the back legs. And I could see that she was starting to, you know, it was starting to affect her mentally. And, you know, because she'd been a rescue dog, I'd always said, she was in a real bad state when we first rescued her, you know, and she'd been used as a breeding dog. And she was in such a bad state. I honestly didn't think that she was going to live very long. So the fact that we got her up to 12 years old felt like a real blessing. So I was really comfortable with that, that decision at the end of life, but it was quite a tricky one that I had to kind of gain agreement by the other people that had also been heavily involved in her life for the last 12 years. So I would say that that is another reason why you probably want to consider who is going to make those decisions if need be. And I would say a written agreement to that effect would probably be the best way to go about that. Because it is those big decisions that would make this arrangement, for me, quite tricky and complicated. So what does dog sharing do in terms of community? I mean, it's amazing how dogs can bring people together. And it's amazing how, you know, you've only got to take a dog for a walk in a park and you strike up a conversation with somebody. And it's really interesting when you're sharing a dog, when there's kind of, you know, two owners or three owners or even four owners, and you're walking the dog and people see the dog and they're like, I mean, they do it now with Rodney, but they'll see a dog and they're like, oh God, oh, hey, Dolly, how are you doing? And then they look up and they're like, oh, who are you? Like, oh, I'm Paul. I'm, you know, Dolly's owner. Oh, is it not usually? And it's so funny that people recognise a dog first and you come second. And the other thing I've noticed as well is if you're walking down a street and you recognise somebody, but you haven't got your dog with you, they don't notice you. So it is really true that dogs are a real, you know, mechanism for being socially connected. And sharing dogs can really lead to lasting friendships. You know, because you really do get to know people. And, you know, if you're sharing a dog, you're often having to pop over to their house to pick the dog up, or they pop to yours and have a bit of, a cup of tea or a glass of wine. Or you go to places together with the dog as well. And it's really great. One thing that I did find, actually, the only, and this is quite funny, and this is more a bit of a bit of an emotional bit as well, but And I know kids do this as well, and this is not unique to dogs. But because they're so excited about seeing somebody, if you go to somebody's house and you're handing the dog over and the door opens and they see the person, I mean, they know that, you know, before they, you know, get to the end of the driveway, they know where they're going, they're so excited. Dolly used to be like, oh, and Rodney does this now too when he goes to his daycare or to his Borrow My Doggy. So excited to get where he's going. And the door opens and they run in and they're really excited and off they go. And you're kind of stood there going, oh, okay, I'll go then, shall I? There's no goodbye. They're literally living their best life. Off they go, boom. And similarly, the other way around, when you're taking the dog, the dog's like, yeah, well, hi, and off you go, walking off. But the person that's just had them and looked after them for 2 weeks, it's kind of, so they go, oh, bye then. And that's the only sad bit. But I've been assured, I mean, I don't have human children, but I'm absolutely sure that kids do this too. See ya. And it's good in a way, because you know that they're going to a place that they feel safe and they want to go to and they have fun. But it just means that, you know, you're the boring alternative at that point in time. So off you go. But, you know, you've only got to wait a week or 2 weeks or whatever, and then you're the exciting bit. So in summary to dog sharing, I mean, from my personal experience, it's a really, really fantastic way to experience the love, the companionship of a dog, without that full-time commitment and without that full commitment of responsibility and cost. So I'm all for it. I've had some great personal experiences with it. I hope this podcast has given you some tips and considerations if you are thinking about it. But if you do have any questions, please do send them in. You can either get me on social media, Dr. Paul the Vet, or you can email me or the team on hello@theconsultroom.co.uk. Thanks for listening.
You've been listening to The Consult Room. I really hope you've enjoyed today's show. Please do subscribe, follow, or share this podcast. I'd love to hear your feedback. If you want to get in touch or collaborate, then do reach out to us at theconsultroom.co.uk or connect with me on social media as Dr. Paul the Vet or Dr. Paul Mantelope.